Speaker will be Alex Aiken from Stanford.
Thank you very much, David. Can everybody hear me on the... There we go. So my co-author, Yuqian Zi, was supposed to come and give a talk, but unfortunately he couldn't get a visa, and so I'm your sub. Apologies for that. And I have to also say that I'm here under completely false pretenses. I'm not actually a security person at all. I do most of my work in programming languages. But I do hang out with security people, and from that experience, I developed an interest over the years in finding security vulnerabilities using programming language or static analysis techniques. So the motivation behind this talk is that we all know that web applications are becoming increasingly popular, and they're used to run actually most of online commerce at the current time. And security vulnerabilities in these applications have proliferated in recent years. Actually, most likely the security vulnerabilities are always there, it's just that the exploits for them have proliferated recently. So SQL injection, cross-site scripting, these are probably buzzwords that most of you have heard, but there's really a serious problem because, again, these are important applications. Actually, a lot of real money rides on these applications, and these kinds of bugs bypass standard defenses. So the other kinds of measures we put in place to catch or prevent security errors at lower levels of the software stack don't really help up at the application level. So things like virus detection, firewalls, that kind of stuff doesn't really do anything for these application level attacks. So traditionally, the way people find these kinds of bugs is either by testing or by manual inspection. And this is a kind of mom and apple pie slide for anybody who does static analysis. I mean, why isn't that stuff adequate? Well, because testing doesn't give you complete coverage. And especially in the case of security vulnerabilities, it's often the least expected input. The one that you never would think to test is exactly what causes the vulnerability in the first place. So testing almost always misses these kinds of bugs, at least unguided testing. And then manual inspection, of course, is extremely labor-intensive and doesn't produce very many bugs for each unit of time spent. So the potential advantages of static analysis are that it can find bugs early, potentially immediately after the code is written, or at least when a complete system is built. Potentially you can find bugs very effectively, and by that I mean that static analysis has the potential, and not all static tools do this, to tell you that to actually be verification procedures and to tell you that certain classes of errors are not in your code at all. Okay? And even the ones that aren't complete verifiers typically give you extremely good coverage, at least in contrast to testing. And finally, they tend to be very economical ways to find bugs because provided there's a good tool, you'll have a high degree of automation, meaning relatively little human time is needed, and you don't have the big investment in developing test cases. All you need is the source code, and you can immediately run the tool. All right, so this talk is about static analysis for scripts. And why scripting languages? Well, because these are the languages that are used to write these big web applications. Okay? And the focus of the talk is going to be on detecting SQL injection vulnerabilities in PHP, although the techniques, I think, could be used for any class of security vulnerabilities in any scripting language you would be interested in. And our goal is to be automatic, so to have no annotations, and to be precise, meaning, and in this case, not so precise that we're actually a verifier or so complete that we're a verifier, but we want to achieve precision comparable to a competent human auditor. So the human beings would be able to find these bugs provided they spend enough time, but we'd like to automate that. Now, why is this not an easy thing to do? Why is this actually worth a conference paper? And why don't we just go out and look up the static analysis techniques that are known for other programming paradigms and just use those? And the problem is that static analysis of scripts, it's not really clear how to use the techniques that are well understood or have been extensively explored. I wouldn't say they're always well understood, but the techniques that have been beat upon for years and years and years for languages like C and Java. And the issues that you have in most scripting languages are they're very dynamic, particularly the type system is very weak, so you have lots of dynamic typing and implicit casts. Something you don't see in almost any non-scripting languages is what I would call the weak scoping that's present in scripting languages, meaning that there's all kinds of different ways that data can be interpreted as code. So you can have, there's dynamic code inclusion, there's inline HTML calls out to database operations, all kinds of things. And then strings, hashes, regular expressions, there's a lot of emphasis on string manipulation operators at a very low level, extensive use of various kinds of hash tables that are really built in, and these are very important features of scripting languages that you don't normally see in other languages. All right, so here's a simple SQL injection error. So what goes on in this particular piece of code? Well, out of a hash table from an HTTP post, we pull out two values, which we assign two variables, user and pass, for password. And then we form an SQL query where we plug these things in. Okay? And I see a little bug there. It should be a dollar user there. I apologize for that. And what if the user variable is set to or 1 equals 1, some peculiar thing, and notice there's also a left quote there. And if we do that, then you're going to wind up, when the string is interpreted by the SQL parser, that the where clause is going to say the user is equal to the empty string or 1 equals 1, and so that's a always true. And so this where clause will always be true, and so this will set the password for everybody in the database to some particular password that I know about. Okay, so this is a typical SQL injection attack. Now, the bugs actually can be quite a bit subtler than this, and I won't take the time to completely explain this one. But this relies upon a peculiar feature of PHP called the extract feature, which takes a key value pairs mapping, a hash table, and imports all those keys as names in the current scopes and makes them all variables in the current scope. And if I can set the default value of one of those key value pairs to something that I have under my control, then I can surprise people by making this particular loop here set the password to something that will give me super user control. All right, so I basically can append to this, but my little initial value there is going to allow me to become the super user when this SQL query is executed. All right, so the idea and the tension, that the problem that has to be solved, is that we need precision, so we need very precise modeling of string constants and hash table string constants and hash table contents, as the previous two examples show. These programs aren't necessarily small, and a lot of the vulnerabilities require looking at more than one procedure. It's data that flows through a fairly complicated chain across lots of modules in the system that actually leads to these vulnerabilities. So we need to be able to scale and get a big picture of lots of code. And it's very difficult in static analysis in general to do both of these things, to be precise, to track the actual values of everything, and also to scale up. And so our solution in this particular piece of work is to use multiple levels of abstraction. So instead of just having one abstraction, one way of modeling things, we're actually going to have a series, a three-tiered structure where we're going to model things very precisely at the finest level, at the statement level, and then we're going to proceed to coarser models at higher levels of code, in particular with our coarsest level at the procedure level. So what are the three levels of abstraction? There's within a basic block. So this is in a straight line piece of code with no control flow. So here we're going to do essentially symbolic simulation. So our initial abstraction is no abstraction. Okay, we're going to precisely calculate the semantics of all the operations within a basic block. Now, is it really complete symbolic simulation? No, we didn't quite go to that effort in our implementation. But for the important operators, the ones that tend to involve security vulnerabilities, we do model them completely faithfully. So with enough engineering effort, this could be almost completely precise modeling of the semantics at the for a single basic block. Then at the intra-procedural level, meaning within a function, but between basic blocks, we're going to summarize each basic block into a few facts that are important for figuring out what's going on with the flow of data and unchecked or unsanitized inputs, okay? And then at the interprocedural level, we're gonna have function summaries. And so this will be another form of summarization that captures information that's important about functions. Okay, and the important things that we're gonna be capturing here at these later two levels, again, are what values have been sanitized, what have been checked, what syncs require sanitized input, and then some information about the control flow with across functions. So in particular, whether a function always exits, what values flow from what inputs to what outputs, things like that. All right, so now I'm just the rest of the talk, I'm going to tell you a little bit about each of these three levels. And along the way, I'm going to show you little code snippets to try to motivate why we need to do what we do and what's tricky and what's technically interesting about static analysis of a language like PHP. Okay? So at the intro basic block level, we've got four things I'm going to tell you about. So strings and Booleans, there's actually technically interesting things to say that also turn out to be very, very important in practice. And then there's a couple of things that are very important in practice but not that technically interesting. So I will blow by those fairly quickly, but I want to mention them because they do highlight some of the features that are important to scripting languages. So strings. So strings are almost the data type, the primitive data type in scripting languages. They form the glue that pastes together the web front end, the back end database, and all the processing that goes on in between. So all kinds of built-in functionality is associated with strings, and all kinds of special syntactic support is given for strings and string substitutions in scripting languages. So we model strings as concatenations of segments. Okay, so if I have something like this, where variable A is going to be given the string, substitute variable, the old value of variable A in here, and the word and the old variable, the value of variable B, and then the string width, and then the variable C. Okay, and so the new value of A sub 1, will be represented as this set of segments. We don't keep track of the order, but we do keep track of where each segment came from, and that is useful for knowing whether any tainted segments are getting into any tainted segments and which tainted segments are getting into other values in the program. All right. Now, there's one very important thing, technical point about this, and I see that I've just destroyed the laser pointer that somebody lent me, so it seems to have fallen apart. So I'll just set this down very gently over here and continue on with my talk. And the important technical point is that we model the value of A there, the initial value of A sub 0, that's modeled as an unknown. So when we do symbolic simulation, we're really analyzing these basic blocks in isolation. We're not looking at the rest of the program while we're doing this. And so A0 here is treated as an unknown or a variable. Okay? And what this allows is this expresses polymorphism in the block environment. So we don't know where this block is going to be used, and because A0 we have a way to represent unknowns and then make use of them later in the summaries, this is going to give us a fair degree of leverage in connecting the basic block information with the function level, with the intra procedural and function level information later on. Okay. Now, Booleans. So here's a little snippet of code. And what does this do? Well, this is our typical code where first you run some validation procedure on some string, in this case the user ID, and that yields a Boolean flag, okay, and then only if the user ID was valid do you go off and do the query. Okay. And this kind of code requires, if you're going to do a good job of checking the security potential security vulnerabilities in this code and not produce a huge number of false positives, you have to keep track of the correlation between the Boolean okay and the sanitization of user ID. The fact that whether okay is true or false tells you whether the user ID is an okay value to send to an SQL query or not is a critical thing to track. And so we do that with a construct called untaint. And untaint is a Boolean. That's a static representation of a Boolean, and it takes two arguments, S0 and S1. And it's true if the values in S0 are sanitized. So if the Boolean is true, that means the things in S0 are okay. And if the Boolean is false, that means that the values in S1 are okay. And so in this particular case, the value of okay, the new value of okay, will be untaint. And if okay is true, then user ID is sanitized. Otherwise, nothing is sanitized. All right? And in program analysis, static analysis jargon, this is how we capture path-sensitive properties in our system. And this rather unusual representation of Booleans is really important because this style of code, where you compute Boolean flags and then pass them around to say what operations are okay downstream, is very, very common in real scripts. All right, now for the two technically less interesting ones, but nevertheless important. For code inclusion, the way we handle this is we resolve the code path from the string representation. And this is another place where it's very important to actually track the values of strings as precisely as possible. So if we can figure out what code is being loaded, then we simply go and find that file, parse it, and then splice it into the current basic block. And the important technical point here is that the scoping has to be handled correctly, because the semantics of code inclusion in PHP is naturally the one that's most surprising, that all the variables that are in that included code, their scope is governed by the place in which it's spliced into the code. So there's no scoping protection for the included code at all. Typecasts use a series of casting rules. We use a series of casting rules on the symbolic representation of values. Essentially, we simulate the casting behavior of the actual execution semantics at the level of our abstractions. And here's a few examples. If you have if A1 is a string, if you cast that to an int, well, strings that are not valid integers in PHP get converted to zero. Okay, and so then the test whether A is equal to zero will actually be true. Okay, so there's a perhaps surprising thing in that piece of code, but that actually is the way PHP is defined, and that actually causes security vulnerabilities if people don't remember this particular semantics of equality tests. Okay, or I should say the integer, the string to integer conversion, the thing they don't remember. All right, and the only issue here is that there's actually a lot of these casting rules in scripting languages, and some of them are fairly complicated. All right, so the summary, at the block level now, as we do symbolic simulation of a block, we're going to throw away most of the information and only keep a few things that we've found to be relevant to detecting errors downstream, and the fact that we only keep a little bit of information is what helps us to scale this up to big applications. So we're going to keep some track of some of the data flow information, and I'll show you what I mean by that in a minute. We're going to keep track of potential errors, meaning sinks or places where values are consumed inside of the basic block, where if those values are not sanitized, then there will be a security error at that point. Okay, so the potential errors. And then the return values from the current block, things that the block produces, and finally any variables that the block sanitizes. So for data flow, here's a little example. We form a couple of strings, and I showed you before, we represent the strings as segments. So the conclusion, the summary of this block from the point of the data flow would be that the initial value of A flows to the value B1, meaning the final value of B, and also the initial value of B flows to the value of the final value of B. Okay. So that's all we keep track of, just all the pieces of data that came in and where they appeared in the output, or where they can appear in the output. For trusting sinks, so here's another little example. And let's see here. So the important thing to notice here is that the password there is included in the query string, and then later on, that's passed to a SQL query function. Okay? So if the password is not sanitized, if it's not checked to make sure it's okay, then this is potentially a security vulnerability. So the potential error here is that, or the thing that has to be remembered, is that the initial value of pass has to be sanitized on input to the block. And of course, since we're only looking at the block in isolation, we don't know that until we hook this up with other pieces of the program. Notice that the user string is not included in the potential errors because it's been sanitized. And finally, if there's a return statement in the block, what values are returned? Okay, and this just keeps track of the string segments and booleans that the return value can return. So in this case, it can only be the segments, initial values of A and C that could be returned. And finally, what values are sanitized? So here is a function that exits if A is unsafe, and so if this block terminates without exiting the entire program, then A sub zero, the initial value of A, will be okay. Okay, so it'll be safe if we actually exit this block normally. All right, now, at the function summary level, the kinds of things we're gonna capture are some preconditions, meaning what things have to be sanitized on input. The post conditions, meaning what things are guaranteed to be sanitized on output, and then the return value and whether the function is an exit function, meaning whether it always halts execution of the program. So get rid of that. So I'm not going to show you any equations or anything like this. I'm just going to do the function summary with an example. Here's a slightly more complicated piece of code. Right? And what does this do? So I'm going to use this piece of code for the next four slides. So first we check whether, so if B is not safe, then we exit. So if, the first thing we do is check B, and we quit the program if it's not safe. And then we do an SQL query that involves A and B. And then we return a Boolean saying whether the value of C is safe or not. Okay. Now, for the purposes of detecting potential errors, well, clearly A has to be sanitized on input, or there's a potential security vulnerability here. So our set of potential errors, or things that have to be sanitized, the preconditions here will be just A0. Now, B is checked to see if it's safe or not. Okay, and and B is one of the, also what happens to be one of the inputs to the function. So what that means is that on output, B has been sanitized. So before this function executes, we don't know whether B is okay or not. But after this function executes, B will definitely be okay, because if it wasn't, the program would have terminated. So that's an example of establishing a post condition. And then finally, this particular function returns a Boolean, whether C is safe or not, and that's represented, of course, as an untaint. So remember that untaint is a Boolean, and in this case, if the Boolean is true, then C0, the initial value of C, is known to be okay. And last but not least, this function can exit, but it's not unconditional, and so the bit saying whether or not this is an exit function will be false in our summary. All right, now, so what do we do with this? So that's actually it. Those are the three levels of abstraction. We simply run that over an entire code base, and we did this for six open source applications that are used in lots of places. So we tried to pick projects that were important to people and that already had a large install base and were fairly mature. And the system divides the reports up into two kinds, errors and warnings. And this is actually important for understanding the results as they're explained in the paper. So an error, in our case, is one where we detect a security vulnerability. So we know that an unsanitized input can flow to a security-critical operation. But we also know that input is under adversary control. So it comes from someplace in the environment that we know, just by the semantics of PHP, is something that an adversary could potentially affect. And then warnings are exactly the same thing, except we don't know the status of the input control. Either the program is not complete enough, or there's some other piece of the environment that we can't see, so we don't know where that potentially tainted value is coming from. We don't know whether it's under adversary control or not. Right? So it's exactly the same algorithm in both cases. It's just a question at the last moment whether what we know about the original input, whether it's something that's like a get or like a post that is definitely coming from potential adversary, or whether it's something else where we just don't know because we can't see potentially the entire flow of data that's outside of the code that we've been given to analyze. So the results here, we found 105 errors. These are actual error reports, and they were all easily exploitable. And actually, there were no false positives in the errors at all. Okay, so everything that was reported to be an error in these six applications was actually a legitimate security hole. These were confirmed by Secunia, and it got rated from medium to critical. And there were five separate security advisories issued for all of these errors together. So they were batched up in a few different security advisories. We also had 115 warnings. We didn't take the time to actually go through all the 115 warnings and see how many of them were actual errors, because in some cases it just wasn't clear from the, as I said, because you don't know where the input's coming from. As humans, we also couldn't tell, since we're not the authors of this code. But there were definitely some security vulnerabilities among those warnings as well. There were a few that we did identify and that were actually included in the security advisories. But as I said, we didn't check all of those. So some related work. WebSari is a type-based tool for PHP, and they were actually the first to look at using static analysis tools, actually a combination in their case of static and dynamic analysis for scripting languages. People have looked at SQL injection in other contexts, in particular for Java, and there's a nice work by Benjamin Lipschitz and Monica Lam on using alias analysis in Java for detecting SQL injections in Java programs. And then people have looked at analyzing strings before. And so string analysis actually is a little subdiscipline unto itself. And then there's various security analyses and information flow analyses for C, And there's a lot of these, so I'm not going to, I'll just name two that I happen to be familiar with, SQL and MC. And so the main differences between what we're doing here and previous work is the precise block-level simulation. So it's actually, you know, getting down and really doing symbolic simulation at the block level, that simplifies a lot of things. And I didn't show you all the details of why, but this is actually very, very important to the precision. You get a lot more false positives if you don't do that. Path sensitivity is very important, and I explained that several. I think I've harped on that enough at this point. Accurate modeling of strings is also something that we do that's not seen in the previous scripting analyses anyway. And finally, the handling of regular expressions. So regular expressions are ubiquitous in these languages. I didn't tell you about that, what we do, but we have some things I think work quite well, and you can see the paper if you're interested in that. Finally, the results are very accurate. We have no error false positives, but keep in mind this is not a verification tool. All right, so we don't even promise to warn you about every potential vulnerability, but the ones we find are very likely to be serious vulnerabilities. And it's fast. Once you get the simulation runs only on small pieces of code, and then the rest of the information that's being kept around is not that expensive, and so the analysis scales well and runs fast. Okay, conclusion. So the big message, the takeaway, is that static analysis of scripts is actually something you can do. It's actually possible, and that's something that I would have doubted myself a couple of years ago. It's also, I think, important because these scripts have become very, very important in practice. And I think we're very likely to see more efforts along these lines. In particular, I'm aware of several commercial efforts that are starting, or semi-commercial efforts that are starting to look at static analysis of scripts. And so I think there'll be a lot of activity and tools coming out in the next few years. I didn't put one more thing on the slide, but there's one more bullet I would, if I could put one more bullet point up there, I would say one thing I would hope is that this is the first time that researchers of any sort, really, in computer science have taken a serious look at scripting languages and what they do. And I would hope that one of the things we would learn in doing this kind of work is what would make a better scripting language? I mean, and what is a scripting language, really, and how is it different from these other kinds of languages? And maybe eventually we could have some redesigned scripting languages where it wasn't so easy to do the wrong thing. Anyway, that concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to take questions if there's time.